are you people? This is Starship Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN.
If they pass a Barack Obama day, I think we should all go kite surfing, just like the president has been seen doing and looking so happy doing.
I am going to, here's what I'm going to do on Barack Obama day. I'm going to celebrate quietly with my friends and family at home. But then I think what I'm going to do is, I don't smoke, but I am going to chew a box of Nicorette just for the hell of it, because I think that that's the, as I know that's what he would do.
Celebrate.
What would Barack do? That's my new thing.
Well, that's a good thing to think about on a day like that. So
exactly.
August 4th passes and the Illinois legislature has its way, that will be a legal holiday in the state of Illinois. Barack Obama Day.
Do we get that day off?
I don't think so.
Do you get any day off?
No. Commemorative only is what they say.
I don't think.
Commemorative only, so.
We have in the studio with us, actually, and we're going to be talking a little bit later on about bigger stuff, but we're going to have Adam Kinzinger join us in just a few minutes. But we have, as I mentioned when we were talking to Bill and Wendy, the former ambassador to Canada from the United States. That's a pretty big job right there. And we're very proud here in Chicago because it was a Chicagoan who was doing that job. Actually, the last two ambassadors were both Chicagoans, weren't they, Bruce?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah, Ambassador Bruce Hayman is with us. And the thing that I know that we want to talk about here, you left on the 20th of January, right? Because that was basically the president said that he wanted all the ambassadors to go.
Well, we actually left on the 18th, but the 20th was the formal resignation date.
Now, who handles this when there's no ambassador?
So all the embassies have the ambassadors that are there have a deputy, and it's called the deputy chief of mission. The ambassador is the chief of mission for the United States of America. And the deputy chief of mission becomes the charge d'affaires that they
sounds
temporarily,
important.
It is incredibly important, actually,
because
they take temporary head of the U.S. embassy and the mission there until the next ambassador arrives.
So what about policy, though? Well, I mean, if policy actually has to be enacted here, and you would imagine, since Canada is such an enormously important trading partner and security partner with the United States, it's part of the North American, not just the free trade aspect of this, but the security, the NORAD and all of that, that's all part, Canada's a big issue, and especially if Putin gets hot. God knows what's going to happen. So, that level of communication at the State Department is still going on because no ambassadors right now. I don't think there's any major foreign capital that has a U.S. ambassador in it at the moment, right?
So there are about 1/3 of all the ambassadors are political appointees, 2/3 are career, and of the 1/3 that are political, virtually every single one of them left post on January 20th or just slightly before. And so that happens to be the largest capitals of the world, London, Paris, Berlin, Ottawa, Buenos Aires, Tokyo. We can just keep going through
them. When does that change? When will we start seeing people occupy those permanent positions?
As the president appoints his new ambassadors, they then have to have background check. They then have to get what is called agreement by the receiving country. But I would think if the U.S. says I'm sending this person that
don't be so sure, especially in Australia.
So we'll go for that. And then it has to have Senate confirmation. So there are hearings and then Senate confirmation. So this isn't happening tomorrow.
No, it's not.
Could be a number of months.
In this age of Twitter diplomacy, as I like to call it, the president puts out quite bold statements, brash statements, sometimes even offensive statements we've seen. In your posts as a diplomat, you have to sort of filter that for the people in your country. I mean, how the nuances involved in trying to do this in a Trump era, I can only imagine the challenges. Have you thought about that? What advice would you give to the person who takes your role next?
Well, they're getting advice from the State Department in Washington, telling them what they can and can't communicate. And in many cases right now, what we're seeing, we even saw it in the National Park Service where they started talking about the environment. Everything got shut down. So my sense is in watching the media flows coming from our embassies around the world today, it's very tightly controlled and non-policy based and just recognizing the administration, a hearing, we've got a new secretary, and it's more factual than anything else. And so the complexity of that communication in a private sense, I think, is taking place. But in a public sense, we probably are in a quiet zone right now, and there's probably increased anxiety that's taking place in capitals all around the world because we're fairly quiet.
In Australia, I mean, obviously, there was a tense phone call, at least according to the transcripts that have been released, and there was and I thought that the Australian Prime Minister was diplomatic in his response. He didn't want to get into he didn't want to publicly discuss the what was going on in that phone call, and he contradicted the notion that Donald Trump had hung up on him, and it was that the phone call ended in a goodbye. I don't know if you've ever had a wife or a girlfriend, and you've sometimes a hang up. Well, you didn't think it was a hang up. It's a hang up. I don't know what happens, but whatever that was. But I just wonder now, where does the deputy ambassador, the charge d'affaires,
charge d'affaires,
where do they get a call then?
And what
do you say?
My guess is what's really happening, and according to news reports, this is what happened. Is that the Australian ambassador, who is in place in Washington, made way to the White House and had conversations. And also, and I recognized on my own Twitter feed, John McCain reached out to the Australian ambassador and expressed confidence in the U.S.-Australian relationship.
Right.
And and I laud him for that. And so I think John McCain played an interesting and specific role, which was helpful.
All right, Ambassador, hold on one second. We're going to come back. We're going to talk to Adam Kinzinger. And we also want to talk to you about about Canada here, because I think it's the one piece of this that hasn't been discussed. If there's going to be a redo of NAFTA, what does that look like for the U.S. and Canadian economies, which are intertwined in an incredibly tight way?
Yeah,
right?
I look forward to describing the U.S.-Canada relationship in much more depth.
I look forward to it as well. But first, I look more forward to Violetta Potter-Medic doing the WGN Traffic Trouble Spots. Bro Collins Show with Anna DeBlantis right here on 720 WGN. In the studio with us, we're very honored to have the former ambassador to Canada as of the 20th of January of this year, Bruce Hayman, who is a Chicagoan, who is now coming back to Chicago after his three-year stint as the ambassador, the American ambassador, United States ambassador to Canada. And a lot of what's happening here in the conversation in these first blizzard-like 3 weeks of the Trump administration have been about Mexico, a little bit about Canada. I know he's going to be meeting with Prime Minister Trudeau at some point here, whether it's in Canada or in the United States. It's a little unclear, but we're told is on the agenda. He was asked that Sean Spicer was asked that question last week in the briefing. When are you guys going to meet with Canada? Because it's traditionally one of the first stops for an American president, right?
It really is. But first, let me just say thank you for allowing me to have this opportunity to join you today. I love Chicago. We've been here for 33 years before we went off to Ottawa for 3 years representing our country. And, people like Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Gallup polls over the last several years rank Canada as the most liked country by Americans of any country in the world, like 93%. I was saying to Roe earlier today, you can't get 93% of Americans agree the sun comes up in the east and sets in the west.
So true. And Canadians are so likable. So they're great ambassadors everywhere they go.
Canadians are amazing. First of all, the country, and I thought I'd use this opportunity to educate all of you a little bit more about Canada than maybe what you know. Canada is the second largest landmass country in the world. It's second to Russia. But it only has 36 million people. And 80% of those people live within 100 miles of the U.S. border.
Mm-hmm.
And so this vast, very large, beautiful country with millions of lakes and everything else is incredibly important to the United States, and I'm going to tell you why. First, it's our largest trading partner. And if you go around and ask people randomly in the United States, say, who do you think our largest trading partner is? You're absolutely right. And it's Canada. And it's not
that's in terms of money. That's in terms of our product being bought there and their product coming here.
Correct. And not only product, but goods and services. And so goods and services, number one. The three largest countries are the United States and Canada, the United States and China, and the United States and Mexico. But Canada and our trade relationship, We have a trade surplus, which means we sell more to Canada than we buy from Canada. Mm-hmm. So trade surplus, largest trading partner in a trade surplus, millions of U.S. jobs depend upon it. Two-thirds, 35 U.S. states, their number one export market, export, is Canada. And so we create lots of jobs in the United States. And so while people are all running around talking about NAFTA, which I'm sure we'll talk about a little bit, NAFTA is not just the United States and Mexico. It's also the United States and Canada. And our largest trading partner in which we create millions of jobs in the United States is Canada. And we don't want to mess that up. I'm telling you, we don't want to mess that up. Number two, in addition to that, energy. We buy more energy from Canada than anywhere else in the world outside of what we produce ourselves. We buy 3.4 million barrels of oil, but not only oil, hydro and other renewable energy sources come to the United States. It's our largest energy supplier.
So let's talk about what this means for the relationship here in NAFTA, because as you're talking about all the important trade elements in Canada, which are clear, and we don't seem to, you know, we look at Canadians because, a lot of Canada speaks the same language we do, even if we can't understand it. We have a shared kind of cultural value system. They look and act like Americans, right? I mean, that's, I think, an important thing for Americans when they look at that. I mean, I know it's a culturalist thing to say, but I think that we do it that way. When I think the Trump administration is dealing with Mexico, they look at Mexico literally as aliens. And you know, you wonder about with all that economics going across that border, there's all that economics going across the southern border as well. And NAFTA has become this boogeyman. It's bad, terrible, awful for the United States of America. You are the ambassador to Canada. Do you think NAFTA was bad for America?
NAFTA was good for our U.S.-Canada relationship. It opened up the opportunity for us to create products on both sides of the border. You know, we call that supply chain, which means that things that are supplied in the manufacturing process. When a car is made in Canada, 50% of its content is U.S. content. A carburetor that's made crosses the border 6, 8, 10, 12 times just to get produced. We make things together. We're interconnected. And so since we're so interconnected, NAFTA was a good thing. Now, NAFTA is more than 20 years old now. And so is it an agreement that could use some updating? Absolutely. And there are a lot of things that Canada and the U.S. can work on in negotiating an updated NAFTA agreement, which I think would be beneficial for both the United States and Canada.
Well, I saw you there, because you and I have known each other a long time. I saw you at I wasn't there, but I saw this on television. It was at the North American Summit. Right.
North American Leaders Summit.
It was Obama.
Last June.
Peña Nieto and Justin Trudeau.
Correct.
Right? And there was Bruce, just standing right there.
Oh.
And so that was the three of them meeting on this. Do you think, obviously now Barack Obama's out of this picture, but you still have the other two
right
as the leaders of their country. Do you think that Donald Trump, the next, you know, is going to be able to work with these two leaders to craft something that, because Mexico at this point, we talk about the trade deficit and how Mexico's killing us. I mean, if you look at the Mexican economy and you look at the status of Mexico as an economic power, especially compared to its own resources, I mean, it's not. I don't know that it's necessarily winning that battle. So what I want to know is, do you think that real diplomacy can be met here?
Absolutely, it can be, and it's about personal relationships. And so every day where we're being diplomats around the world, we're building relationships. Mm-hmm. Those relationships are already taking place between the Trudeau government and the White House. And there are meetings that have been taking place between family members of the Trump family, as well as other leaders within the White House, that have been taking place with senior leadership in Canada. And so these relationships will be important as we dive in and get closer and closer to trade negotiations, border negotiations, and the like. You know, our border with Canada is 5,525 miles long, because we go down Alaska and mm-hmm. we go all the way across our 49th parallel. And 400,000 people cross that border every single day.
Which direction are they going?
They go both ways. So they go both ways. And some of the largest entry points into the United States come from airports in Canada. And so this trade, this business relationship, whether it's NAFTA or a new version of NAFTA or a new version of a trade agreement, call it something else, I think is important for the U.S.-Canada relationship. And it's important not just because it's important to Canada, which we care about as our next-door neighbor, but it's important to U.S. jobs. Millions of U.S. jobs are dependent upon this, and we need to understand that. And Americans need to understand how important Canada is to us. And you mentioned earlier in our conversation NORAD and NORTHCOM. NORAD is a unique thing. It exists in Colorado and in Canada. NORAD is a joint command with the United States and Canada. And at that joint command, they protect North America.
Right. And
North American radar, our whole defense. And it's not just air, but it's also sea. And NORAD is one of the most important components for North American defense. Canada is our partner. There is nothing like it that the U.S. has with any other country because it's under joint command.
You know, you mentioned something else too about the airport crossings and the other places where people are coming across into the United States from Canada. And there was always concern about that. I remember even in 2000 there was concern about on the West Coast about people coming in. That there was some intelligence at that point that there were people intent upon doing bad stuff for the Y2K, for the celebration of 1999 to 2000, coming in through there, maybe to Seattle to do some damage there. And so the Canadian system of checking people and making sure that, you know, the people who are coming and transiting through Canada has got to be precise for our own safety.
Correct.
Do you feel like they're doing a good job with that?
I feel we've done not only a good job, but this last year we've done an even better job. So there's something called pre-clearance. And for those of you who have traveled to Canada, you'll know what this is if you've flown in the airports. Because you actually check into the United States of America in the airport in Canada. So you go through U.S. Customs and you go right through, show your U.S. passport, and you get into the United States while you're still sitting in some terminal in Montreal or Vancouver or Calgary or Toronto. And so that is a great level of protection for the United States, but it's also a great service for Canadians because they can then fly anywhere they want, land in the United States, and not have to go through customs as they arrive here. Mm-hmm. This last year, we enhanced that. It was only air only. We added rail, marine, and land. And so we got that passed, and a pre-clearance agreement got passed through Congress in the lame duck session. One of the things I'm most proud of that we worked on together.
So, and that makes America safer, too.
It makes America safer. It makes us more effective with our relationship and travel. And everything works better when we have this in place. We're sharing better information with each other. And it's an important part of our relationship.
Ambassador, thank you very much. It's an honor having
Thanks,
you.
Ambassador.
Appreciate it. I also want to just say to Anna, I think that Justin Trudeau, the Prime Minister, is too good looking for his own good.
He is a good looking
guy. To say that. I don't think the ambassador should comment on it, but I'm just going to say that out of my own. I think he's too good looking for his own good. All right, Ambassador, thank you very much. I look forward to this again.
Pleasure.
Right now, Violetta Powder Medic's got the WGN Traffic Trouble Spots.